Hey, FedEx Pats, don't make it sad. Take a bad posting and make it better. Remember to always pack your gin, then your posting will surely get better, 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 better.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Here we are, episode 19.
Yes.
And we're talking about today when you just don't fit in.
Mm-hmm.
We're back under the stairs today.
Yes, there's some construction work going on outside and there was the beep, beep of the bobcat. So
right outside my door is a little bobcat thingy.
Yeah.
And yeah, beep,
yeah,
beep,
Bob the Builder
beep.
Was making too much noise.
Yeah. So apologies if we're a bit echoey, but we're back under the stairs. Yes. I do like it here under the stairs.
Yeah, I don't mind it.
Yeah. Okay, so the reason we're talking about not feeling like you fit in, I've been thinking about how we always talk about making your expat life fat and living a fat expat life mm-hmm. and filling it up and whatever. But what happens when you just can't?
Yes.
You know,
it's, and how long do you give yourself to fit in?
Yeah.
Do you put a time limit on it?
Do you know, for me, it takes at least a year.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't even something that I considered when we moved to Abu Dhabi. I didn't think, how am I going to make friends?
Mm.
I didn't really even think about it. It was our first posting.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I was just in new mummy phase because Sadie was so young that, I thought, well, I'll just join a baby group.
Right, yeah.
But I can't remember thinking on the plane over there or as we were getting ready to move, what if I don't make friends or what if I don't fit in?
Yeah, but do you know, I think too, it's sometimes that it's the making friends bit is the tough bit, but then other times it's just that it's just not your culture.
Not your place.
It's not your place.
Matt and I did have a conversation where we gave each other 12 months.
Right.
And if at the end of the 12 months, if one of us was really desperately unhappy, then we would pack up and go.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it definitely you can't go before 12 months.
No. Too much happens within 12 months, you need that settling in period.
Because I really think there's that magical day when you've been there for, over 12 months and someone says, I'll meet you at blah, 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 and you suddenly realise that you know how to get there and you didn't get lost.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, my God.
Yeah, I think I've told this story before of our first couple of weeks in Abu Dhabi and we just had the one hire car and Matt's office was way outside of Abu Dhabi and I had to go and pick him up, and the first day I did I was in tears because I was on this road to Dubai and I remember he got in the car and said, I'm divorcing you and I'm getting on a plane tonight.
I did the same thing.
It wasn't like I could open up my Gregory's or put on the satellite GPS. That just wasn't available to me.
And it
was all his fault.
And I have had the same thing in just about every location I've been in. It's always Greg's fault that I'm lost. I have been in a shitty little car. They have these cars in Malaysia called Protons and they're like little dodgem cars, and we had a Proton Wira and it was awful. But I remember him, off he went to work, I had stuff to do, getting in the car, getting completely lost, scary lost, when you're out in the middle of the boondocks and you can no longer see where the city is and everything is really unfamiliar and you've got your kid in the back of the car and you don't know which way is home and no map, no anything. Mm-hmm. And just thinking, when I finally find you, buddy, I'm gone.
We still laugh about that.
But I remember getting even lost in Perth, but it's not that same extreme.
No, because it's even though it's not familiar to you, it's your home country, so there's still a little bit of same-same about it. But being in a completely different surroundings, it's scary.
Yeah. And I wonder, what is it that makes you blame your partner? Is it that whole, well, you brought me here, it's your fault? You suddenly lose rationale
absolutely.
I actually decided to come here.
I was happy to come until I got lost on Sheikh Zayed Road heading towards Dubai. But even when our family comes, I know my father-in-law will pull into the driveway and he said, do we take that same route every day? Yes, Tom. Oh, and they end off their week here and they've been to visit us so many times, but it's all just too much and they can't figure it out.
Yeah. This city, Doha, is particularly hard to figure out, I think, because it's not a grid
No.
in any way. No. It's all over the shop.
Yeah.
So I guess everyone has settling settling in blues. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we wanted to focus today on, you know, what happens when you just can't shake it off, and what are what are some of the things. And when we put a note out on the 4 Kids 20 Suitcases page, we had some interesting replies, and there was a woman called Natalie who mm-hmm. lived in Paris.
Yes.
She's back in Australia now.
Yeah.
But she did not have a nice experience in
and
Paris.
And that worries me a little bit, because Paris is my dream place to move to and to retire mm-hmm. in, and I just wonder,
I think,
is my dream of Paris and settling in actually going to be completely different in reality?
So Natalie arrived in Paris with an 18-month-old mm-hmm. and her husband had this fantastic job. He was working for the Australian Embassy.
Oh, yeah.
But money was really tight because it wasn't one of the traditional expat gigs. They'd seen the job come up in Australia and applied for it, and there were all sorts of complications to it.
Okay.
But they had to borrow money from their parents before they went there, because you need to have a certain amount of money in the bank when you want to move into Paris, whatever, you know, when you're not all covered in a lovely chocolate-coated expat deal.
Right, okay.
So she had been frantically busy before she got there, because they'd had to sell up the house and, you know, get it all ready, and he'd gone ahead, and she had this very small child. So she was basically exhausted once she got there. Yeah. Natalie's husband is Nathan. So if you hear her talk about Nathan, that's who she's talking about.
Hi, Nathan.
And I want to apologise profusely, but I recorded this when my kids were in the house, so I had the microphone up really close to my mouth. You can hear just about every breath I make. But here's Natalie.
Okay.
So we arrived in the middle of winter, 35 square metre apartment. I just collapsed when I got there, and I actually think I had a breakdown. I couldn't speak the language. Nathan could speak fluent French. Mm. And I'm in this apartment with my 18-month-old, who was quite fiery at the time, and my husband would go off to work each day, you know, office overlook the Eiffel Tower, drinks in the ambassadors. Lodge, and I just, and then I thought, what am I going to do for work? I can't speak French. You know, I did my master's in primary teaching, so I could have taught in an international school, I guess, but I didn't have a work visa. I became quite patriotic while I was there. I was like, I don't want a goddamn baguette. I just want a toasted sandwich. Just give me a meat pie and sauce. And, you know, it was really hard because I couldn't speak French, and, you know, I didn't know all the etiquette either. You know, I'd run down to the ATM in my, you know, Ryoga pants and a singlet, and it was freezing, but I just, you know, had to run down quickly. And people would just glare at me and say things because they were just appalled that I was dressed like that. And, you know, now I do it defiantly at the local, my kids' local school, because I can. And every time I do something like that, I think, you know, up yours, Paris. I can do this in Australia. The only way I could enjoy myself and integrate would have had to have been for free, or, you know, very, very cheaply.
Yes.
So I kind of didn't fit in as well with the other expat mums in a way.
Yeah.
I feel like I can't let it go. You know, at some point in our lives, I want us to have like an expat posting somewhere to be able to enjoy it from a point of view where you're not worried about how you're going to pay for your next, you know, dinner out or something. Mm. But I don't know that will happen.
Is it a bit like if you don't give it a go, like if you don't have a successful one, you'll feel like it's kind of beaten you, that you could, that you want to show yourself that you could have a good experience if it was under the right conditions?
Exactly.
So what would your advice be, like, for anyone who's going somewhere new, now that you've been through that experience?
It's so cliche. It's hard to say, you know, don't have any expectations and go with the flow, but that's really what you have to do, and be open-minded. First things first is find a parent group, a support group. I think it's a lot different as the years go on with technology. And social media, like it's making us sort of closer, even though we're further away from people. But to keep up your communication links with everyone, and attempt to learn language, find a hobby, and try and get out and socialise. Try and find something that you can do that adds to your professional repertoire.
What was your vision of you in Paris? Like, this is the fantasy, not the reality. What did you think it was going to look like before you got there?
I didn't have a fantasy. I couldn't come up with one because the unknown was that scary that I actually couldn't visualise what it would be like, and that's what made me anxious, I think, to begin with. I remember having a meltdown in one of the shops because my mum had posted over Christmas pudding. Yeah. That she made, and I just wanted to get some custard and some tampons, and I walked out of the shop. I'm like, they don't even have bloody tampons or custard. And I just couldn't recognise a normal tampon. You're in your own world. No one can see into your world, but you can't communicate with them in their world. It was just bizarre walking around, not understanding anyone and no one knowing that you couldn't speak the language unless you opened your mouth. It was quite scary in a way.
Now, Tommy, do you think if you would have stayed longer that things would have changed in your headspace at all? Or do you think that you'd gone to a place that you could never come back from in your mind?
There's a lot of what ifs, though. If I got a job, maybe in an international school, and got me out of the house, it probably would have improved. I don't know that I think I'd gone to a place that there was no return, to be honest. I've travelled a lot and I've been to a fair amount of different places. You know, even getting into an argument about how to spell my name, they told me that I was spelling my name wrong because they put an H in it, and I don't have an H in my name, but, you know, I was spelling it wrong. It just, rubbed me up the wrong way.
Yeah, I imagine it would if someone told you you didn't know how to spell your own name. So, but you feel like you'd still like to go somewhere else and do the expat thing, is that right?
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to.
What do you think?
I thought it was really interesting. A few things. I think she definitely needs to try and do another expat posting somewhere else.
Yeah.
And have a good one.
Yes.
Because I have a feeling she's holding on to this still.
Yes.
yeah, and I think she just needs to go somewhere that's
the right fit.
Yeah. But also, did Paris not work because maybe there was other things going on in her life at the time, and no matter where she went, she wasn't going to fit in?
I think there were so many things. Like, it was like every little thing.
Yeah.
One of the things that really struck me is, and I think we need to do another podcast about this down the track, is your package is so important.
Absolutely.
Do you know, because the people you meet,
borrowing money off your family, living in a tiny apartment, and you're away from everyone else.
Yeah.
But the people you meet can still do the fancy dinners, but you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
That's hard. That would be hard.
And you think about it, Sis, every time you meet someone who's really unhappy, it's usually because either their housing is really crappy or they can't get their kids in the school they need to get them into, or they just have no money because they didn't calculate or they didn't factor in.
Yeah.
There are so many things to factor into an expat move that you just don't think about when you're at home.
And I think even at home there is some element of keeping up with the Joneses, but I think there's even more so sometimes in an expat community, perhaps.
Well, I think if you're living somewhere where it's under difficult conditions, but I mean, this wasn't even it. She was in Paris, but like
and
she said,
they were fantasy of what her life was. I mean, for me, see, Paris, I'm obsessed with.
Yes,
like every time we book a holiday, I'm like, should we just go back to Paris? And Matt's like, no, let's see some other places first. And I want to live in Paris. I want to retire in France, and that's me. As soon as I get off the plane, I'm half my size.
Yes.
I've got a nice bob. I'm wearing an Hermes scarf with a striped top, and I'm riding a bike with a basket and a baguette. And that will be my life. And it'll be bonjour, bonjour, and all this. Like, that would be my fantasy.
Yeah. And cooking up a storm.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
And I'd be walking everywhere.
But see, the truth of it is, like she said, a lot of times she was walking through slush because she arrived in winter.
Yeah.
Do you know, like she said, it was really hard with a stroller because it's a very un-baby-friendly city.
Yeah.
So all that stuff suddenly changed because, hang on, it's meant to be springtime with blossoms, not snow and slush.
Yeah.
And I can't get my child on the metro and I can't work out where I have to catch the train to.
I also think my brother once said to me, the first time I went to Paris, my brother said to me, people either love or hate Paris. There's no in between.
Yeah,
and yeah. My family had been, my brother had been, and they were all lovers. My brother and sister speak the language fluently, and my brother's like, I hope you love it. And I did.
Yes, And I think the language is the big thing in Paris. Yeah.
I think we're moving to a city. We're lucky here that even though we all speak different languages, the common language does tend to be English.
Yes.
Moving to a city like Paris, I wonder maybe would she have done better had she booked herself straight into a language course?
Yeah, like
but
an
then
intensive.
Maybe financially that...
No, it wasn't an option.
Yeah,
because
I would think you would have met people in the same boat as you.
And her husband spoke the language fluently. So that, I think, makes it even
absolutely. I think it's different when you're going on holidays. Matt speaks French and it's easy because I'm like, well, you just go up and order what I want.
Yeah.
But if I was living there and I was by myself...
If you didn't have your own personal interpreter.
Yeah.
Or that interpreter was going off to the embassy and having embassy drinks and you were home
left
with
behind.
The kids in your 35 square foot apartment.
I can see how that could, rub me up the wrong way. Yeah.
Yeah. And what I thought was funny though, I mean, I did think it was hysterical that they told her that her name wasn't spelt properly.
Yes.
Because that's a very French kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. But then I get that here. They call me Sarah and not Sarah.
Yeah.
And I used to get really upset about it. But now when I make a booking, if it's a hair salon booking or a restaurant, I actually call myself Sarah now.
Yeah, I'm always Christy. I'm never Kirsty.
Yeah, you get Christy a lot.
I get Christy constantly. I used to think it was an Asian thing because when I first moved to Indonesia, everyone called me Christy and it was like, oh, I can't wait to get out of Asia and someone will finally call me Kirsty. But no, everybody's called me Christy everywhere.
I've got a Kirsten, a Kirsty and a Christy in my life. So I have to be really when I'm talking to,
But what I was going to say was what I noticed with Natalie's language, she always referred to every situation. It was, they said this to me, they did that to me, because it hadn't become Joe at the cafe said this. It had just become all of Paris.
Yeah, you're all horrible. I hate you all. Give me my toasted cheese sandwich.
But she was saying that was one of the things. She didn't realise that she wasn't going to be able to find just normal loaves of bread.
Mm-hmm.
Like that it had to be a baguette.
Yeah, you're not going to get your tip top.
And she just really wanted a toasted sandwich.
Yeah.
It's the tiny things.
Yeah, it's the threatening to divorce because I've
become huge.
Yeah, and I've gotten lost and I'm divorced my husband because I got lost picking him up from work. Do you know I can I get where she's coming from.
Yeah, I can't find a dry cleaners. I'm going home.
Yeah. But I hope she does another posting somewhere else.
I do too, and because I feel for Natalie that she wants to prove to people that
she can
do it.
It
wasn't her.
Yeah.
You know, it was the situation.
Yeah.
And she wants another go.
Yes.
Yeah. And I do too. I hope she does as well.
Yeah.
She's a really lovely lady.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, so just talking about Natalie and her needing a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that whole thing about how you can end up not liking yourself because you can get very cross with how
the
you're
way
behaving,
behaving.
Mm-hmm. And also if you
But I would never admit that to Matt, by the way.
But also if you don't like the culture and then you're having to live as part of that culture,
mm-hmm.
and I see that happen here, you know, where people don't want to conform to covering their shoulders and covering their knees. They get very bitter about I'm being made to live this way. And I thought it was really interesting. Valentina left a comment and she said, because I had written a post about Natalie and not being able to open your mouth, and she said, I can totally relate. I hate Houston, but even more precisely, I hate myself being in Houston.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how hard I try, I just don't fit into this culture. Valentina's European.
Right.
In these habits, in this type of world, I feel like sometimes a day is quite okay and I didn't cry and I didn't feel desperate, but then I enter home and I see this thick, stupid carpet everywhere and it's 90 degrees and I break down like as if it's something really outrageous and important. I hate myself for crying about carpets, but I just can't get out of it. I would pack for the northest village of Scotland or the eastern village of Turkey tomorrow. Just get me back to Europe.
Oh, Valentina.
I know, but isn't that exactly what we've just said?
Yeah.
She hates herself for getting so upset. And then she is living in this really, you know, she's in America. You're meant to be in, you know, one of the luckiest countries.
Yeah.
But she just hates it. And I think, too, if you're European and you're living in a city that is this massive, big, vacuous kind of strip malls.
And Houston is not in New York or in LA where it has some European qualities to it.
Well, the bizarre thing about Houston, I have to be fair to Houston, they have an amazing art scene. And that's the thing, the Australian director of the Australian Ballet, he went to Houston.
Right.
And so it does, but it's all in the city. And the only thing that happens in the city in Houston is that corporate life and the arts and whatever. If you're out in the burbs, and Houston's a massive city, so you can live 45 minutes out.
Right.
You know, and you never go into the city because it's got all those little subcultures and big malls and strip malls and whatever. So you don't get to be a part of it. Do you know?
It's like, there, but it's not there.
It's kind of like if you lived way out of Sydney, you wouldn't ever see the Opera House or the Bridge or any of that because you'd be going to school in the burbs and living out there.
And your local shopping mall and what have you.
Yeah. So I think it's a tough one, but... Yeah, I really felt for her. I really did, because I've been talking to Valentina over the blog for a few years. And
she does. And how long has she been in Houston, do you know?
A recent move, fairly recent.
So she needs
move.
A bit more time, maybe.
It does take a long time.
Because I found that moving from Abu Dhabi to Doha, I thought it was going to be the same, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Doha is different to Abu Dhabi.
Yes.
And I had that say, the carpets for her was the villa for me. Houses in Doha are not as nice as houses in Abu Dhabi.
Yes.
And I miss my really nice house in Abu Dhabi.
It's
I can understand where Valentina's coming from, so hopefully over a bit more time she will learn to cope with her carpets.
And I thought, it doesn't even matter too if it's you moving to a different country. So many people told us that the place that they really felt they didn't fit in was at home. And that was
Went back home.
Yes. Like there were, I would say.
It reminds me of our repatriation episode. It scares the bejesus out of me.
Well, on that, I wanted to talk about Naomi Hathaway. And have you read Naomi's piece?
It.
I think just about every expat on the planet has read her piece. But in case you haven't, Naomi wrote a brilliant piece back in September 2013. And it was called I Am a Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And the philosophy of I Am a Triangle is you start off in your country, which is a circle, and you're a circle, and then you move to a different country, which is a square, and you don't really fit into the square world because you're a circle, but you start to blend and you start to fit in. So you don't really become a square, you kind of become a triangle, because you're a little bit square and you're a little bit circle. And then as a triangle, when you then go back to your circle home, you're never going to be a circle again, because you've become a triangle.
And also you're hanging out with more triangles in the square.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? There's more triangles with you to go along with the ride.
Yeah.
But you get back to the circle and you're one of the only triangles.
Yes.
If that all makes sense. Yes.
Yeah, it does. I love the analogy she uses for kids. She calls them stars.
Yes.
You see, because they're not, they weren't ever circles.
They're never going to be a circle or a square or a triangle. They're just a bit of everything and they're stars. I loved that.
I love it too. Anyway, I gave Natalie a call and had a quick chat to her because she has repatriated home. And I said to her, you know, so many people have said they don't fit in at home. What do you think it is that alienates people so much? So we'll just have a listen to Naomi.
Okay.
See what she has to say.
I think that the biggest struggle I had was that when I went to India, when our family left for India in 2009, I had done so much research. I knew what I was getting into. I had talked with people that had lived there before. And then when I landed, like you said, the tribe was already there, kind of almost waiting for us.
Yeah.
And the same happened. Yeah, I mean, they literally were waiting with arms open. How can I help you? What do you need? Where should we go explore? And the same thing happened when we moved to Singapore. I did all of our research, and the tribe was there waiting. And I failed to realize that moving back to the United States, even though we moved to a state that we hadn't lived in as a family, I didn't research that location at all. I just assumed it was going to be fine. Of course, we knew it was back home to America, and everything would be grand. And we landed, and I felt more out of place than I think I've ever felt my entire life. And it was a huge shock to the system. So yeah, it was harder to go back home than it was to move abroad.
Was your tribe going to be different from before you left to when you came back?
I think that one of the things that impressed me most when I moved overseas was the tribe that I found. It was full of men and women that were adventurous. You know, they had kind of by virtue of just moving somewhere else had adventure coursing through their blood. And I think when we moved back, we were struck by how many people didn't have passports, had never flown outside of the country, many of whom had never flown, period. And part of that's just where we moved back to, and that's, you know, just a matter of location. But as I started meeting women, I found that everyone was, there was just a lack of adventure, a lack of saying the words, why not? Everyone was too busy, plugged into their busy. And we kind of just, we felt like little gypsies, I think, that kind of just floated in with, and I guess even as silly as I realized a couple of months ago that I put away all of my fun clothes and my fun jewelry and my funky India shoes. So I had kind of developed this, I don't know, the person I came back with, the things I came back with, I tucked away because they literally didn't fit in. And I adopted, I even cringe to say this, back to yoga pants and black. You know, everything was just bland.
And I think it's that thing, isn't it, Naomi, that if you pack that part of your life away and you stop talking about it, well, then it doesn't exist. And if that doesn't exist, part of you doesn't exist.
Right. And I think it's interesting talking to the more people I meet that have gone through this, the more it becomes so important that you don't pack it away. I think that you need to find a middle ground for being able to celebrate who you've become as you've moved around the world, but yet not ostracize the people who haven't had that experience. My daughter, who is now 8, doesn't tell people that we lived abroad. She finds it easier to just share that we last moved from the last state in the United States. And when we've talked about it, she said, I just feel like if I don't talk about it, I don't have to explain it. And I said, well, do you think that you'll forget it? And she said, maybe. So I think that what you said about packing it away, I think it's important to remember that that's not necessarily healthy.
Do you see people's eyes glaze over if you start to talk about the old life too much?
You know, when we would start to tell our story of where we moved from, everyone was very excited to hear it. You know, India is someplace that I think, like you with Jakarta, it has such a, I don't know, such an elusive kind of, it's a great location. It's exciting, and it's something that not very many people are going to travel to. So they want to hear about it, but then you're right. There's definitely that point where the eyes glaze over and they start fidgeting and looking away. We've been on a journey the last 2 years that we've been back in the United States to really find a location where we could move, where we do fit, where people have experienced other places and have moved around. And now that we're where we are, it feels a whole lot better. I think the other thing that really has struck me also is a volunteerism vein, I guess, that runs through people. That's what I spent most of my time doing abroad. And when I moved back, I found myself in a location where most of the spouses, both spouses, were working. And so charitable, you know, giving of yourself to charitable activities isn't something that we were finding. And so that was another thing that I really was searching after. And then, to be honest, it boils down to also just diversity and skin color and culture and religion and all of those things. We had experienced so many different amazing melds of variety. And then we moved back to the United States and it felt like everyone was the same. And so we've been on a search to find that diversity and put that back into our lives as well. Every situation is different. I think I've met people who have moved literally back to the same home they left. And I don't know what that feels like. So my advice really is just very general in moving back to your passport country. I think it's super important that you keep in touch with the friends that you met overseas. Super, super important. That I think that those relationships became such a huge part of my personal life that it's imperative that you keep talking with them. Even sometimes every day, we've done a lot of Skype calls, a lot of WhatsApping. And then as in terms of being on the ground back at home, I think protecting the fact that you are different and not letting that be a negative, not going into it, assuming that you're going to fit and just knowing that you may not and that it's okay. The Facebook group full of people that have all gone back home, that's been kind of the ringing anthem across everyone, that it when they realize that it's okay to not fit, it becomes easier to form some new relationships around your new persona, I guess. Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of different very practical ways that you can bridge that gap. If you've got children and you are involved in your new school, add something to the school programs. Volunteer to have a passport day or a cultural event where you can bring in some of, you know, everyone's got a cultural history and a cultural background. And I think sometimes, speaking for me back in the United States where we live, a lot of people don't celebrate the differences. And so, you know, you can be of service and use your experiences to help ground you and help find some like-minded people. I experienced with a lot of my friends in India who were of Indian nationality, but had never lived in India. They're called non-resident Indians. And they really expressed what it felt like for me to move back home when they said, I look like everyone does here, and I'm expected to know how to act and how to behave and how things are. And it almost felt that same way to come back, where you speak the language, and so of course you should know how everything functions, but you've been gone, and sometimes you just need a bit of space and a bit of time to reacclimate. So I think that's the other piece, not only to understand it's okay to not fit in, but to give yourself space and time to work through everything.
So what do you think?
I thought two things. For me, it scares me a little bit. If I feel like I would feel like Naomi, that I would be the triangle if we moved back to Melbourne, mm-hmm. where we own a house, but we actually don't have a lot of... we don't have any family. We don't have a lot of friends there. I feel like I would feel like her if we moved back to Melbourne, and moving back to Melbourne really scares me. Mm-hmm. But I think if we moved back to Sydney, I'm still going to be a triangle, but I've got such a great support network of family and friends that I can say to them, I'm having a really tough day and I miss this and I miss that. And they would support me and they would listen. I know they would. Yeah. I know they would.
Yeah.
So moving back to Sydney does not scare me at all.
Hmm.
What I haven't thought about, and what Naomi touched on, was that her children, and that the daughter said that she doesn't even talk about that she came from, mm-hmm. that they lived in India, and that they're not mixing with a lot of different cultures and nationalities. I worry for Sadie about that, because her whole life here, her friends are from all corners of the globe.
Yeah.
And when we do move back home, it will be in a certain suburb that yeah. you're not going to see a yeah. lot of different faces and a lot of different cultures. And that worries me that that would disappear from her. And I would hope that she would never want to say...
It's just easier not to talk
yeah,
about it.
Yeah, that but made me really sad.
I do that, though, as an adult, definitely. I don't talk a lot about... Well, I don't think I do. I don't know. It's a really hard one. How long are you allowed to keep talking about your other life before people get sick of it? Do you know, like, Greg's yeah. parents were expats, and they talk all the time about mm-hmm. their life abroad, and they tell the same yeah. stories and whatever, because it's a really special time for them, you know, yes. and they talk about all these people from that time and...
Yeah.
In, you know, the minute they retired, they were off and travelling off to go and see the people that uh-huh. they'd met in their travels, and it was a really big deal for them.
Yeah.
But I've never stopped to think about, well, what that must be like for their original friends and yes. family to yeah. have to hear about it.
Yeah.
Do you know, when do you stop about saying, oh, well, you know, in Doha or in Abu Dhabi
yeah,
or whatever.
I don't know.
And the fact that a small child picks up very quickly yeah. that nobody cares, that, you know, it's back yes. to that repatriation
nobody
thing.
Cares.
Nobody cares. They don't want to hear. So I think what happens when I go home is I think people ask me things like, they'll say, oh, so how's guitar? And I'll say, hot. Yeah. Do you know, that's my whole thing.
You know,
I don't elaborate
when
about
we
it
first
lot.
Moved to the Middle East and I started going back home, there was lots of questions about my
yes.
life here, because it was so different.
Yeah.
But now we've had friends and family come to visit, they've seen it firsthand.
Yeah.
Now when I go home, there's no need for them to ask questions
you
about
don't have that conversation.
Because they've heard
yeah.
it. So now our yeah. conversations are things that are happening to me personally.
Yes.
That it yeah. doesn't matter where in the world I was living,
yeah.
those things would have still happened and we'd still be having yeah. those conversations.
Yeah.
If we then move to another country, I'll go back home, they'll ask, what's it like to live there? What happens? What does it look like?
Yes.
We'll have those conversations. Then the following year, it will be back to talking about my personal
yeah.
things that are going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm okay with that, but just hearing her talk about her daughter, that really made me sad.
Yeah.
And I just hope that doesn't happen to Sadie.
I don't know. Well, I guess I'll be able to tell you when Lizzie goes
yes.
off to school in
yeah.
January
yeah.
what that's like.
But I just think there's a big difference moving back to your hometown, moving being back with your friends and family compared to moving to your home country but a different city.
When I think about moving back to your hometown, I think about the people we interviewed in the repatriation and the amount of people that said, I went back to the same house in the same town and it felt like it just never, ever happened.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we sort of researched on finding some tips of what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are somewhere and you are really, really hating it, and I know it's an expression that I have used before about that thing, it's a journey to enjoy, not a, what is it?
You don't have to endure it.
It's an adventure to enjoy, not a journey to endure.
Yes.
And I think that as corny and awful as that is, it really, you've got to live by that mantra.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need to give yourself time. We've both said you need at least 12 months. Yeah. It took me 2 years in Doha to really stop hating it. I hated this place when we arrived.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Do you know, someone's just come to mind, and this isn't in the show notes or anything, but it's just come to mind. I have a girlfriend here called Marie who is very much an explorer, adventurer, all around. She's been all around the world. And I know that when she got here, it was really tough for her because she, to me, is the epitome of green mountain climbing, fresh air, good living sort of girl. And got here and it was like, I'm living in a concrete jungle. Mm-hmm. There's no playgrounds. Mm-hmm. This is not the right fit for me. But she has started, like, she takes the most amazing photos.
Yeah.
And she will walk, even in this heat, she will walk her kids to school and walk home. But she'll go through, you know, we talk here about living in the rubble. She'll go and take photos of the rubble.
Yeah.
And she'll take photos of manky cats and the things that the rest of us look at and go, oh, that's so ugly and it's so whatever.
She finds the beauty. And I was going to say that as a tip. I joke about getting lost trying to pick Matt up, but, you know, I had a deadline. I had to be there at a certain time to pick him up and, you know, I was focused. But my tip is to get lost.
Yes.
Take yourself somewhere, walk around, and you never know what you might discover. You might discover that you've found the best shawarma man that you never thought that you would find.
Yeah.
Or you'll go somewhere and you'll start chatting to someone that you would never have met before.
We got lost yesterday, didn't we?
We did.
And I discovered Dragon Mart.
Yes.
God, we were out in the boondocks.
We were way out. Now, put me there 6 years ago, I would have had a massive freak out.
Yes.
But we were fine yesterday. We got there.
We were at, for those that are going, I wonder where they were yesterday, we were at a conference yesterday speaking about, it was the How Women Work conference, and we were speaking about Blogging Me, which is our blogging community.
Community, yes. How to have a career in a suitcase and a portable career. And,
yes, yeah. It
was and blogging is something that you can do.
It
no
is.
Matter where you are.
It was good fun, but we did take the long way home.
Yeah, we did. That was my fault.
And we had a lot of people looking at us like, what are you two doing?
Yeah.
Because we were in the
industrial... We stuck out like sore thumbs, didn't we?
We were in the industrial area. There were not a lot of people that looked like us.
No.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so I wanted to say back on Marie, too, that I mentioned, she has a Facebook page called Walking Qatar or something.
Ah.
So I'll put a link in the notes so people can have a look. So what were some of the other tips we had as well? It was...
I think definitely you should make an effort to go and meet people.
Yeah.
And if you've got a baby, join a baby group.
Yep.
If you don't have children or you've got older children but you love playing poker, find a poker group.
Yeah.
If you love art, there'll be a painting class.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's probably the best way of trying to fit
in? I agree. And you've got to try and, because I mean, a lot of people, that just absolutely horrifies them, having to front up somewhere where they don't know anyone.
That was me.
Yeah.
That was me.
But you really have to. And I think, you know, sitting at home being miserable is not going to change things.
No.
Nobody's going to come and knock on your door and say, I've found the perfect place for
you. And
I
can tell you that from experience. When we moved to Abu Dhabi, I remember it was the 1st of July 2008. We arrived at midnight, went straight to the hotel, and I remember as we were checking in, I saw a couple standing there, and this woman, she just had an air about her. You couldn't not look at her. We went to bed, got up the next morning, Matt went to work, and I sat in the lobby of this hotel with Sadie as a brand new baby thinking, what am I going to do today? I don't know anyone. I don't know where to go. Maybe I'll just get in a taxi and ask him to take me to a mall.
Yeah.
And this woman, the same woman from the night before checking in, just appeared. Hi, I'm Rose. I'm from Amsterdam. I have lived here, 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 and here. Are you new? Yes, I just arrived last night. Have you lived anywhere else? No. Right, come with me. And she bundled Sadie and I into this hideous Abu Dhabi taxi.
I love expat women like that.
And she just took me under her wing, and it was easy. I just met so many people, and then I ended up finding my own tribe. But when I moved to Doha, I didn't have a rose.
Yes.
There was no one that came to me in the hotel lobby.
You were like the bachelor.
Yes.
You were roseless.
Yes.
There was no one.
We arrived in wintertime in Doha, which I know isn't freezing cold. I get that. Yeah. But I can't swim in 18-degree weather anymore. So we're in this. Do you know what I mean?
I'm just kicking away to myself going, hold it. The Bachelor had the roses. You were a contestant on The Bachelor.
Yes. And no one was giving me a rose.
You were, no one gave you a rose.
I made the final in Abu Dhabi, but I was not a contender in Doha.
You were out in the first round.
And it really did. Honestly, it took me a couple of years to settle into Doha.
And maybe that's a point for anyone listening that is a happy expat that has fitted in. Keep your eye out for the people that don't have someone.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, it really is your job to kind of pay it forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always talk about my first experience the same. I had a rose, and except her name was Karen. But I remember her saying, you know, expat women have been doing this stuff for years. We don't need official organisations to make us do it. We just do it
because
we know it's the right thing to do. And I think it's really important that people, because you can, after, you know, I've been here for 5 years, so I don't really meet a lot of new people.
Mm-hmm.
But I do through the blog. Like, people will say, I'm moving, or I'm miserable, or whatever. And it is our job, and I've just realised I've got someone in mind that I'm going to do it with, because this woman did write a note and say, I hate it here, I'm miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to. You have to reach out to make other people feel comfortable.
For
and maybe
sure.
you're not going to become best friends with them,
no.
but you might get them over the hump.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they'll remember you for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we both remember our people.
Yeah, I remember Rose.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, what are you talking about on podcasts this week?
So I have found a new podcast. It's actually, it's new to me. It's called Spark London. And what I've listened to quite a few episodes now, and it's real stories, so people telling their real life story on a stage, sort of like an open mic night, but there's no editing or anything like that, and it is fascinating.
Yeah.
And I think it started well before podcasts were around, but now the organisers have actually made it into a podcast
series. This has actually become a thing. It's a thing in Australia as well. You now go to pubs and you do live stories, and it's bringing back the art of storytelling.
Yes.
Because, you know, in the old days, people sat around and just told stories.
Yeah.
And that sort of has got lost. And I know Richard Fidler on Conversations with Richard Fidler, which is a fantastic podcast.
Yes.
I think we've mentioned it before. But he does ones out in the bush. So he'll go miles out of town, and people will come, like country people will come for miles
to
and meet in
story.
A shearing shed and tell their stories. Mm-hmm. And I have been walking around the compound at night listening to these stories, just howling at some of them.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
people, you just forget that everyday people can be fantastic storytellers.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is what Spark London is about. And there's one episode called Baby Giraffe. And it's about this woman who falls madly in love with a co-worker, and it's all going really well, but there is a massive catch.
Oh.
And I won't say anything more.
Oh, I want to go listen.
And then there's another one that just made me piss my pants laughing. It's called Breaking Into Dance, and it's this Scottish girl, and I love a Scottish accent, so already I just loved listening to her. And she has this dream, and her dream is to own it in a breakdancing circle. So, you know, like on the streets, like people will just like break out into dance.
It
reminded me of, have you ever seen the movie Flashdance?
Yeah.
And she's walking along the streets of, I think she's in Pittsburgh. And these people just start breakdancing. And she's on the edge of it, and she's just like bopping along, and then she can't help herself any longer. She just like gets in there and does a breakdance. So Kirsty's story is really, really funny. And there's just so many, like there's hundreds of episodes to listen to.
Oh, I can't wait. They're my favourite
ones.
And
some of them are 6 minutes long, and then some of them are sort of 45 minutes long, and you can hear people in the audience laughing, and you can hear
the drinks being,
yeah,
you know, the glass oh. being clunked together is really, really good.
Fantastic. Yes. I really want to do that.
You'll That's like good, it.
I yeah. love, they're the ones I love. I just yes. love ordinary people's yes. stories.
Yeah. Yeah, well, then you'll love Spark London.
Okay, and mine was a blog post, and it was one says that you shared last night, mm-hmm. and it came for me just at the right time. And yeah. it's, she's, I think she's a friend of yours, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, we live together. Well, we met in Sydney. She's from England. Yeah. And we had, let's just say, a very naughty time in Sydney in our early 20s. And then we lived together in London.
Right.
And then we didn't see, you know, I moved back to Australia. We didn't see each other for 10 years.
Yeah.
But we still kept in contact. And we had a, we reunited in Paris a couple of years ago. Oh. She came over from London with another girlfriend. And she's a blogger.
Yeah.
And her name's Sarah. And she blogs at Gringlish.
Yeah. And I mean, I realized as I said this, people are going to think that we planned this and I'm trying to plug your friend's blog.
No, but this is, and she will, she would die that we're speaking.
Right, right. Yeah. But I was walking home last night mm-hmm. and feeling a bit sorry for myself, and you shared that mm-hmm. and I read it and just thought, oh, that's just come at the right time for me. But it's a blog post, and we'll put the link up again, but it's called The Scared of Blogging. And it was sort of all about how you can become really self-conscious mm-hmm. when you blog. And I think a lot of people read blogs and feel that bloggers just put all this stuff out there and willy-nilly and aren't thinking or caring. And the thing is, you really can lose your confidence very Absolutely. Quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's awful if you feel that you've upset someone or yes. you've been misunderstood. Yeah. And I had one of those
moments. Well,
that you
feel moments. You're not as good enough as other bloggers out there yeah. and you're always comparing.
Yes.
And
yes, yes, yeah. yes. I know that happened this morning. A girlfriend of mine posted something saying, you know, something about something's going on online that I didn't even know about. It was not in my radar at all. But she said, you know, let's all name our favourite bloggers. And she named all these bloggers and she didn't name me. Oh. And I remember thinking, oh, okay. And just, you know, all right, I'll join in. But you can, and you can overthink it
uh-huh.
and you can worry about it. But and you can also end up, for the first time in 5 years, I had this moment of, that's it, I'm shutting down. You mm-hmm. know, I've really hurt someone and they've misunderstood me and I'm going to shut it down. But I just wanted to say thank you to her, and I think if there's anyone feeling that way who is blogging, yeah. who is getting self-conscious or starting to second, yeah. you know, give themselves a second thought about it.
You're putting yourself out there to be judged.
Yeah, you are. You are. And yeah. I'm a big believer. I said to you yesterday, you know, that's part of the game. You have to be, you mm-hmm. have to toughen up.
Yep.
And you have to go, okay, I'm going to take it on the chin.
But your feelings can still be hurt.
Yes.
And you do want, and your first initial reaction is to run away and hide. Yeah. And disappear.
Yeah, yeah. And then you go, get over yourself.
Yeah.
Get on with it.
Yes. Put your big girl undies on.
Put your big girl undies on. Go write a blog post.
Yeah. But yeah, Gringlish is overall is a really, really lovely blog.
And she wrote a post, am I right, about miscarriage? I think yeah. I read a post of hers yeah, about she's, miscarriage.
Yeah, she's suffered from a couple of miscarriages and has dealt.
Mm.
Yeah. So she's written some beautiful posts.
Well, she was great. So I wanted to say a big fat thank you.
Love
to
you,
Gringlish.
Sarah.
Oh. Okay. So I think that's us
yes.
for this week. But that was a goodie. I liked doing
it
that
was.
One.
It was. Just go out there, meet friends, talk yes. to people, put yourself out
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Trust me, I know how hard it is.
Yes.
But just do it and give yourself time.
Yes. My favourite ask again this week is, once again, if you have a chance to review or mm-hmm. rate or do anything on iTunes, please do it. But if you don't and it's too hard, maybe you could share us with somebody.
Yes.
So we're trying to sort of
share the love.
Yeah, we're trying to get the podcast out. You know, A, because we love it if you share
yes.
it, but also there might be someone out there who really needs it
mm-hmm.
right now,
yes.
and we hope that we're kind of providing some form of entertainment.
And some comfort for
and
you.
Some comfort. But thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. See you next
again.
Week.
Okay.
Bye.